This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held your hand.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedro Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? Are you sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. Okay, next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
Hey, I am Liz Donovan, and my trail name is Walking Home. I'm from Bellingham, Washington.
Okay, well, you know, we've had one other episode with a trail name. Can you explain that real quick in case nobody knows what that means?
Totally, yeah. So your trail name is given to you while you're hiking a long-distance trail. It started out on the AT, but it's made its way out onto the PCT. So it's usually based on something funny or weird or unique about you. So, like my friend, named Chunks because she threw up in the first 20 miles. Or like Slip and Slide is named Slip and Slide because he, like slid down a giant waterfall in the Sierras. Walking Home is based on just the fact that the first week I was on trail, we were all kind of exchanging, you know, where are you from, that sort of thing. And so every time people recognized Bellingham, Washington, they were like, oh, that's cute. You're walking home. And then it just kind of stuck. So
I can imagine. Yeah, that's definitely walking home. The Bellingham's so close to the border. So You went, I take it you went northbound?
I did. Yes.
What year did you hike the Pacific Crest Trail?
2015.
Cool. Yeah, we didn't really even bring that up. So, yeah, you hiked the whole trail?
Yeah, I hiked the vast majority of it. I had to skip a section in Oregon. It was on, the section by Crater Lake was on fire. and then everything between Ashland and that was just full of smoke. So I skipped that section. It was about 180 miles, but I hiked everything else.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Did you start alone?
Mm-hmm. I drove down with a couple friends, and then they started the day ahead of me. And then we actually didn't see each other until Oregon, so that's funny.
Wow.
You know, you just get a day behind someone, and that's it for a while sometimes. I started by myself and hiked by myself the majority of the time, I'd say. I didn't hike with anyone for too long.
Well, when you say that you drove down with some friends and they started the day before, is that because of the permit process then?
Actually, I think it was just, we got there for kickoff. So, and kickoff's 2 days, and they decided that they didn't really want to hang out for the second day. And I did. That was all. I think we both technically had the same start date. So.
Okay. And when you said that, you know, you hike with certain people for certain amount of time. What was like the longest you kind of stayed in a little pack or whatever?
A little group. I hiked with Slip and Slide and Chronic the Hedgehog, from Sierra City up to, I think we dropped. Chronic went his own way at the Bernie Falls, I think, and then Slip and Slide and I parted at Shasta, I think. So I think that's something like 300 miles, something like that. with slip and slide.
That's a pretty good chunk.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, it was. We got along well. It was a good friendship.
That's cool. And then I take it you guys are still in contact.
Yeah, I don't talk to too many people from the trail too often, which is kind of funny. You know, you like the whole trail community, like the whole time you're walking together, you're kind of drifting out in and out of each other's lives. And I feel like that kind of continues on after the trail. You kind of drift in and out, but you know, everyone's like still kind of in contact, you know, via Facebook or whatever.
Yeah, I like the way you said that. That's pretty cool. So I think one of the biggest questions I have for you is, you know, you did start out alone, and you know, you're a female hiker. I think there's a lot of women out there that just think that's crazy. So what do you have to say about that?
In my experience, hiking the PCT was pretty safe. No one ever threatened me or made me feel memorably unsafe, I think. But it's good to remember that bad things can happen anywhere, and that like remaining vigilant is probably good, and following some common sense rules, like mine, like a big one for me was like not hitchhiking after dark. Like those are probably like good calls, but I also wouldn't let fear like be the only thing that makes decisions for you. And also no one's ever been murdered on the PCT. and yeah, that's so I'd say as a female thru hiker, I would say like have some common sense and like keep your eyes out. Sometimes people are bad, and historical statistics don't really mean anything for the future. But in general, at least in my experience and the experience of many other people, it's been pretty safe. So that's where I'm at on that.
Explain the hitchhiking. Not sure if too many people know why you would have to hitchhike or whatever. So.
Sure. Right. So, to get into towns to resupply, you know, people often ask, well, like, how do you carry food for 6 months? And the answer is that you don't. so every 100 miles or so, you know, that varies, of course. There is a town, off trail. There's a couple where the trail just goes right through, but for the most part, you're going to have to either road walk into town or you hitchhike, which is the, you know, usually safer option actually than road walking. so sometimes that can be a mile and sometimes that can be 40 miles. yeah.
Well, hitchhiking is kind of without getting picked up, it's kind of like a long version of a road walk, right?
Yeah.
so what about your preparation?
I prepared more than most people. I don't know. I prepared, I feel like, an adequate amount. I started saving money maybe a year before I left. That was probably like the earliest, you know, you start saving money and then you're mentally committed. and then I started doing a lot of reading a lot of people's blogs, and doing a lot of research online about resupplying and what, you know, what's the lightest gear, what's the best backpack, what's all that stuff. And you know, hiking isn't really about those things, but I'm glad that I kind of spent those those late nights looking up that stuff actually, because I had a pretty good kit going into it. And a pretty good setup at home for resupply. I did a hybrid method. So some people will send themselves all of their food at every stop and have it all in boxes ready to go. But I didn't really want to do that. It's so much planning. and you end up eating a lot of the same things, and that gets boring.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so I did a hybrid and just I put together like all the town stops, figured out what gear changes I would probably need at the at those points, and kind of laid it out for my mom to put into boxes and send off to me. But yeah, and that all happened like in the last couple weeks before I left. So it was a big flurry at the end.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You had the idea, but then getting it all together was a flurry.
Yeah. Right.
That's funny. So what about, you mentioned the blogs that you were reading and stuff. Was there somebody in particular that you can mention that you read?
Yeah, I really appreciated, Carrot Quinn's blog. I modeled it's interesting. In my head, I modeled my gear list pretty closely after hers. It's really nothing alike. I just kind of took inspiration from it. Yeah, I think that's the only one I can name off the top of my head. There were probably others. I feel like I used Facebook groups quite a bit too. Like hiking Facebook groups.
Yeah, were you on like the PCT 2015 group or yeah, other ones yeah. also?
Discovered that one like pretty close to the time that I left, actually. So it was not as helpful as it could have been, but definitely. Yogi's book was actually really, really important when I was learning how to resupply. There's also As the Crow Flies is a PCT town guide that I used quite a bit. Yeah.
And then what about, I think a lot of people, did you have maps? Did you use your apps on your phone?
Yeah, I used Half Mile Maps. So I got excited the summer before I left and bought my maps too early. I bought the 2014 maps. So for people that don't know who Half Mile is, he's this really incredible hiker that is also a cartographer, and he has mapped out the entire PCT. And then every couple of years thereabouts, either he or someone else that he sends out will go and make map updates and just like walk along the trail and with a GPS and figure that out. And he makes those maps available for free, which is pretty incredible. So they're free to download, but then you can also pay to have them printed, and that's all you're paying for. So it's like $40 for the whole trail, which is insane.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So I had the physical maps, but they were only useful through like, I'd say through like the Sierras before the mileages on the maps and the mileages on my Half Mile app on my phone, you know, didn't really correlate because they were from different years.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so if you're going to hike, make sure you get the paper maps that correlate with the year that you're going.
Yeah, and I'd like the side note on that, the Half Mile app. I mean, it's a free app, and it's pretty crazy when you're out on the Crest Trail, and, you know, you don't have to have – you can have your phone on airplane mode, and you can pull it up. It's all the GPS, and it'll literally tell you how many feet away you are from the trail. It's very intense. It's so real.
It's incredible, and it's yeah. I mean, I navigated giant stretches of the trail just with that, which isn't really best practices, right? like I missed a town drop where I needed to pick up more mail, my mail with my maps in it, and I used the Half Mile app on its own for like several hundred miles after that. So yeah.
That's okay. I mean, it really is very good. And really, a lot of people say the maps they're good to kind of have as a reference, but also if you get a little bit off track and maybe you take a wrong trail for, you know, 5 miles or so, you might even be off the map because it's very, you know, almost skinny corridor. following right. the Crest Trail, right? So, mm-hmm.
yeah, that happened to me once. I took a wrong turn, I guess, up in Yosemite, and I walked for, it was just a couple miles, but it was long enough to kind of, you know, make your day. Like, oh, no.
But that's good, too, that you have the app that you can just kind of backtrack and say, oh, two miles from the trail.
For sure. Yeah.
I don't think I got 2 miles off. What does it say when you're more than 100 feet off?
It gives you mileage. So it'll say, I think 200 feet is the limit. And then it starts to say like 0.2 miles away. And then it technically has a little pointer, like a compass that's supposed to point you back to the trail. But it's pretty, it doesn't work very well.
Might not be the best. Okay. Oh, cool.
That's your phone. That's not half miles fault, you know?
Oh, they've done such a good job. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to ask you about was because I met you, obviously, you know, we didn't really talk about that, but we met at a PCTA event where you're kind of mm-hmm. learning the trail skills and giving back to the trail community by fixing trails, which is really cool. But one thing I noticed was you wear glasses, and then I noticed some of your hiking pictures, you were wearing them. So can you talk about that? Because I hiked with contacts a lot, and I actually got the surgery.
Okay.
So I don't do that anymore, but man, I can't even imagine hiking with glasses.
It's not as bad as it sounds. I mean, they get dirty, like everything else. But I tried to avoid like rubbing them while I was on trail, and then would just wash them when I was in town. Just so that they would, you know, maybe not get so scratched, but they ended up getting pretty scratched anyway. I just bought a new pair when I came home. But yeah, they get pretty gnarly. I figured, you know, like some people definitely take the contacts route. And that's fine. It just grosses me out. My hands were so, so gross. I didn't even want to floss.
Absolutely.
When I put my hands in my mouth even. So, yeah.
That's pretty funny. And, well, I think at some point I would just be like, I'm just done with these glasses. That's just me, but.
Yeah, I mean, I can see without them a little bit. You know, I can navigate, but everything just looks a lot nicer when I'm wearing them. So it was worth it, definitely.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I just thought I'd ask because, you know, it's just something that kind of struck me.
For sure, yeah.
You know, backtracking a little bit, what made you want to hike the trail?
You know, I've never had a really good answer for that, which turns out is not unusual. A lot of people just kind of feel this way. It just kind of wanted to. Like, I think I heard about it in college, and at the time I was definitely, you know, a day hiker, but still did things like hiking in jeans, things like that. So not particularly experienced. And I felt like that was just for superheroes. And then I just kept doing outdoor things. And at some point I was kind of like, you know what, that sounds kind of accessible to me now. That sounds like something that, you know, would be a lot of work, but I bet I could do it. So I think maybe the challenge was interesting. I think the aspect of the trail community was pretty interesting to me. And yeah, it was just kind of a guttural, like, that sounds like fun. I also worked in a basement for a year and a half before I left for the trail. So I was ready to be outside.
That's pretty funny. Oh, geez. So you actually used to hike in and around Bellingham area then?
Yeah, a lot of stuff around Mount Baker, pretty much all the Chuckanuts by now. Yeah, very much in Northwest. A lot of stuff in Central Oregon, too, because I used to work the summers down there. I've actually only spent one summer in Bellingham. So,
Until now.
Until now, yeah. But, yeah, very much a Pacific Northwest-oriented hiker. The desert was incredibly different.
Did you like it though?
Yes. I especially like it in retrospect. I think it was a huge learning curve. Because everything about it is different. You know, you like in the Northwest, you you go camping. It's cold in the morning. You know, it maybe it's raining. You kind of wait in your tent for the drizzle to stop. I mean, this is, you know, very generalized, but then you get out, you hike until you're so cold that you can't keep going, and then you camp, and it's, you know, cold again. And that's not, you know, very indicative of most of the summer, but I mean, that's kind of what camping was to me. And then, yeah, and then you go to the desert, and like, you have the window between 4 a.m. and 10 a.m. when hiking is bearable. And then again, from maybe like closer to the border during the fall or the spring, maybe it's like 5 o'clock at night to 10 o'clock at night. And those middle of the hours of the day, are just, you have to rest. You cannot, it's not worth walking through that time. Cause you'll just be so slow. So, and like carrying water was completely different. So it was just all of these things were like kind of scary to me, you know? But I think it was really cool to see that other side of it. And I think that now that I have that experience, I'll be able to like go do other desert hikes. I think that doing stuff in like Arizona and Utah, the Arizona Trail sounds really cool. Now that I know what I'm getting myself into,
yeah,
I think it'll make future desert hikes way better.
Hey, something really easy to do. If you shop at REI, you can click right through my site. It gives a little kickback to me and helps the show out. Gets the show a little credit there. You get all the same prices that REI offers, but I get a little kickback. So thanks a lot. We also do the Amazon. If you shop at Amazon and you want to click through the website, same thing. You get all the same deals. Click through. Just go to the show notes. Check that out. Hey, thanks a lot for supporting the show. That's cool. So is that your, you got your eyes set on that trail? Is that next or?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, I throw the names of all of these trails out. Like earlier today, I was talking to someone about how the CD2 looks really cool. a couple months ago, I was like talking about the TA, the Te Arora Trail in New Zealand. To be honest, I don't know if I'll do another long distance trail again. It was so much fun and felt so great, but also was, just took a lot of time, you know? And I feel like if I did that consistently, if I were just gone, 6 months out of the year, every year, I like wouldn't have a very consistent community at home. And that's something that I value, but definitely interested in like shorter through hikes, or like chunks, you know, like section hiking. Right. I think it'd be cool to section hike a triple crown.
That'd be cool. Well, you're third of the way there. You know, one thing I've heard before, I'm sure you've heard it too, but, you know, that in the triple crown, you know, world, I've heard it said that you either hike one of the trails or all three. So I'm pretty, yeah, sure you've probably heard that before.
Well, you know, once you have two, might as well.
So, and obviously to everybody else, that's the CDT, which is the Continental Divide Trail, and then the AT, which is the Appalachian Trail. And then, of course, the one you hike, the Pacific Crest Trail. So that's cool. And then, you know, like you were mentioning, the Arizona Trail, I mean, we have the Pacific Northwest Trail that runs right through Skagit County, some of Whatcom County. It's really cool.
Yeah, there are so many. I mean, and there's like really short, I mean, I don't know if you could call like the Wonderland Trail really a long distance trail. It's only, I think it's only what, like 90 miles. So that doesn't really count. But yeah, there's so many.
Yeah.
There's the Hayduke, which isn't really a trail. It's like a route that goes through all of the national parks in Utah.
Oh, we got another one in our state, too. Is it the Bigfoot? Or what's the one that, there's one that takes in both sides of the Columbia River down on the Oregon-Washington border. I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, I'm unfamiliar with that.
I don't think it's a Bigfoot, because the Bigfoot goes from, like, the California coast into the Sierras, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, there's one, man, I can't think of what it's called. Maybe it's Sasquatch or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there's the really long one in the Midwest that goes east-west. I can't remember the name of that one.
Oh, yeah.
It goes, like, through all the northern Midwest straight.
The Long
Midwest.
Trail?
Maybe, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some options out there for
totally
somebody like you that can handle these long trails. So how did your gear hold up for all that time? Did you have any major issues?
I lost a lot of spoons. I eventually, yeah, my backpack started to break down after, oh, maybe 1,500 miles.
How did it?
How did it start to break down?
Yeah.
The back, there's a, like a spine that goes, a metal stay that goes through the back, and that broke in half.
Oh, wow.
And so it was just, it kind of like meant that my backpack just kind of like slumped down on my back while I was walking. So, probably just was terrible for my body, but, that's okay. And then the hip belt started to give me some serious problems in like Oregon. it just like, there was a plastic piece on the inside of it that cracked, and right over the part that like cups over your hip. And so that just jammed into my hip every time I took a step. Yeah. But you know, you kind of do some Frankensteining, some taping, some cutting, fix some things. My smart water bottle lasted probably the longest, like for the price, it, you know, price versus longevity lasted something like 2,000 miles before springing a leak. So that was impressive.
That is. And you only had one?
I had two. I had, people used to make fun of me for how much water, like, capacity I had. Because I carried, let's see, I carried, like, a platypus bottle. Well, in the desert, it was two platypus bottles and then two smart water bottles. Yeah, I think that's it. But I had capacity for like 8 liters, I think. And then I just was so spooked about water after that, that I kept like two water bottles and a platypus, I think. So I always had just a stupid amount of water capacity.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's like 5 liters.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, it's useful for like camping. I mean, I didn't carry that much all the time, obviously. But I mean, those water, like a platypus weighs like half an ounce. So
it is nice to be able to kind of just say, I'm camping here. I don't need a water source.
Yeah, definitely.
What about your top three spots on the trail? And I say top three because it seems like everybody kind of has, there is a three that everybody kind of talks about, but I wonder what yours is.
Sure. That's such a cool question. I was talking to my roommates about this earlier. Like, so much of what you're, you know, the favorite moments that you have on trail are so dependent on like when you go by those things. But I loved the Feather River the most. The North Fork of the Feather River in California was my favorite. It's just this, like, you drop down 3,000 feet into this valley, which is basically all of what North California is. It's, like, up 3,000 feet, down 3,000 feet into these rivers. And the Feather River just was so clear and so pristine and had this like these little pools, and it was just the perfect swimming hole. Slip and Slide, Chronic, and I were there for 4 hours in the middle of the day, just swimming and having the best time. So that was my favorite. And then I loved, the section right after Rainy Pass in Washington.
Like Cascade Pass.
Like Cutthroat Pass.
Yeah.
I hit that at sunset, and that was just one of, like, top three sunsets I've ever seen.
What month were you in there?
It was October.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like right before you finish.
Yeah.
We had excellent weather somehow the last 2 weeks I was on trail. We had one storm go through that was really crazy. But other than that, we had clear weather, and so that was really nice. I spent my birthday on Mount Baden-Powell, and that was also, like the night before my birthday. So I got up to the mountain, watched the sunset, and then was able to watch the sunrise on the other side of the mountain the next day. And that was probably my other favorite.
That's cool. Where's that at?
Let's see. That's right after, I always want to call that town Winthrop, and it's not Winthrop because it's in California. It's around mile 400-ish. It's right before the major species closure.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's really cool. So one question I didn't really prep you for, but, what about if you could, hike another section, you know, like letter section type of hike, what would you go back and do? And it might be totally different from those three you just named.
That's such a good question. I think, I don't know the letter sections, but I'd say maybe, I'd love to see Northern California not in the smoke.
Okay.
Because a lot of, I walked through smoke for like 3 weeks. And there were a lot of times where like Castle Crags, I felt this way. It's just around, Shasta. I felt like there were things that were definitely on either side of the trail that were super cool, you know, but you just couldn't see it through the smoke. So that's probably what I'd do. If we're just talking about like enjoyable, pleasant, really cool sections, the Sierras were really cool. So maybe I'll go back and do those someday.
That's cool. Well, there's another trail up there, the Sierra High Route. Maybe that's...
That's true, yeah. Yeah, tons of good stuff.
How'd you feel when you first got to Washington as you're coming up north, you're crossing the Columbia River?
It felt really good. it felt really exciting. The landscape changes so slowly while you're walking. But I think there was kind of a moment there where I looked around and everything was green. I mean, you're still in a pretty dry section of Washington at that point, but close enough.
Yeah.
You know, you look around and you realize how drastically everything has changed since you started walking, both in season and in just terrain. And that is a pretty powerful moment, like just seeing that, you know, this is what you can do just with your feet. But also, it was kind of sad. I didn't really want the trail to end. So I think everyone kind of has that dual fighting feelings.
For sure. Well, and then you're probably wondering what's the weather going to be like and everything else. Yeah,
totally. Yeah.
Cause you know, was there ever a time on the trail that you felt like just giving in, going home?
Once, right before Kennedy Meadows, I had this conversation with this girl named Snakebite. It was around mile 670. We got to Kennedy Meadows that day, and it was just so dry and so hot, and I walked down this... It was like a 6 mile downhill stretch, and you know, downhill should be easy, but like completely exposed, just so hot. And I got down to the bottom where there was supposed to be water, and there was just this mud instead, and I was like, "Ah!" and then I sat down and ate my lunch, and my everything was melting in my food bag, and I was like, "God, this is just." And then Snakebite appeared, and I was like, you know what? I don't see how it can be better in the Sierras, because it hasn't rained. You know, California hasn't gotten enough rain or snow in years, so there's no way. There's no way the Sierras can be better. It's just going to be like desert plus rocky. and if it is, I'm just going to go home, because I can just spend the next, 3 months hiking around Washington. And Snakebite looked at me, and she was like, "Seriously?" And she just, like, looked so disgusted, and was like, Snakebite's from Australia, so she, like, put in a lot of effort to be here. And I was kind of like, well, yeah. But then that kind of put things into perspective for me, like, you know what, you are tougher than this, you can be better than that. And then it turned out that the Sierras were awesome, and, there was water everywhere, and somehow, I don't know what magic that place is, but somehow there was still water everywhere. So that was cool.
That is good. That's definitely on my list. I don't know if I'll ever hike the whole trail. I've been section hiking Washington. But the Sierras I really want to get to, it's so inspirational sounding.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, very different from Washington Mountains in many ways. I would really like to see them under a healthy coat of snow. Also, there was no snow when I went through, so.
That's funny, because a lot of years people might say just the opposite.
That's true, yeah. It got kind of like, a lot of it is way over the tree line, because it's, over 10,000 feet up, basically all of the time, at least over 9. And I found myself kind of missing like trees or dirt, because it's basically all rocks. But yeah,
so different. So you mentioned the word magic, so kind of made me think about trail magic. Did you experience any cool things on the trail that people were just giving away or offering to you because you were hiking the trail?
So much. Oh my gosh. People are so generous. And I'm really excited to be one of those people this year. Cause I'm going to go do trail magic in Washington, but yeah, I think, certainly by towns, you'll see it's this like you'll just see like this little white thing in the distance, and you're like, oh my God, is that a cooler? And then you get closer and you're like, yes, it is a cooler. And then, yeah, people will leave like cheap soda and cheap beer and water bottles and sometimes fruit. The wild bird cache is probably the most extensive, incredible, semi-permanent cache. And that's right outside of Burnie, I think. I hope I'm right about that.
is that California?
Yeah. And it's they've set it up with a shower. There's like a solar shower, I guess with a hose set up. But I'm not sure. There's like a place to charge your cell phone off of a car battery. There's, like a cabinet that, is locked to keep critters out. But it's fully stocked with canned goods and dried goods. There are picnic tables. There's like all of this. It's incredible. So that was probably the craziest one.
Did you happen to know who set that up, or?
Yeah, the couple that maintains it actually drove up just to hang out with hikers. I guess they it's kind of on their property, and they didn't even know the PCT went through their property when they bought the place. But they were just out back one day hunting, I think. if I'm remembering that story right. And then there were, like, all these people walking through, and they're like, what? What's going on? And then they were just so excited about it that they set all of that up and just go hang out with hikers every day, which is pretty cool.
That is cool.
I should also mention Devilfish, who bought a minivan and spent the entire summer last summer just driving around and helping hikers. So he set up water caches in the desert and put together little, like, coolers in various places. So thanks, Devilfish.
Yeah, he gave a bunch of rides too, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a ride from him around a closure from the Paradise Cafe to Idlewild. But he was, like, giving rides to injured hikers too and all kinds of stuff.
That's cool. Yeah, I think I remember hearing him on Trailside Radio. Ratatouille was talking about him. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you saw him, you met him, he's famous.
I did. I only met him the one time, but I experienced his magic several times. I think he also set up, it wasn't marked as being a Devilfish cache, but he set up he has like a specific cooler that I recognized from the desert. And he set that up at Hart's Pass, which is the last road crossing before you hit the Canadian border. And I just remember that as being like a very fitting sort of last trail magic sort of thing, you know, like, man, you've been with us this whole time. That's so cool.
Yeah. He literally went all the way up. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's the time of the podcast that we ask our guests some questions. They don't know these questions. They've never heard them before. So let's see what they have to answer. But first, let's talk about Cascade Hiker hats and bumper stickers. Go to CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Check out the hats and bumper stickers. Support the podcast. You can also donate. There's a donate button on each of our show notes. Go there. Find pictures of our guests. Now enjoy the rest of the show. If you could put a sign on any trail and talking to hikers, what would you say on that sign?
Like a big sign or like a little sign?
Yeah, you know, like a trail sign. You know, it might say like a warning sign or, you know, don't do this sign or something like that.
Enjoy every day you're here, even when it's hard. And also, please bury your poop appropriately.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a story behind that.
Well, just, you know, just, you hear a lot about, like, LNT being an issue on trail. That's all.
leave no trace, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, what piece of gear did you carry, or maybe you carry it now, do you consider not replaceable? Even if it's heavy or awkward or just weird.
Well, I carry my camera with me, and that's a 2-pound DSLR, which is absurd. A lot of people would consider that not worth it. But to me it was, because I took some really awesome photos.
What kind of camera?
It's a Pentax K3. And I mean, like, any, you know, nice DSLR would be just as acceptable. But, yeah, for me, that was a very reasonable thing. I love my McFlurry spoon. My McFlurry spoon is my favorite, like, cheap piece of gear.
That's cool. And you said you lost a lot of spoons, so.
Yeah, and then that stuck. That was good. It broke a lot of spoons, too, so. But that one never broke.
Well, yeah, you can't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah, I love my tent. I have a Big Agnes Fly Creek. So, yeah.
That's a good tent.
It's solid.
Well, and it lasted the whole trail, too, right?
Oh, yeah. And it's probably got another through hike in it.
Wow. So,
yeah.
That's real good. Do you ever take alcohol hiking?
Oh, probably not for stoves, right?
No, I'm talking about, yeah, like
yeah.
marijuana or alcohol.
I don't smoke weed, so I don't take that with me. But yeah, I mean, I'm down to pack in some beer. Just, I mean, it depends on the section, right? Like, if you're going on like 120 stretch in the Sierras, probably not. But if you're just gonna, you know, do 15 miles or something, then yeah, totally pack in. You know, the beer platypus is definitely a thing. Although your platypus smells funny after that.
So. I was going to say, yeah, a lot of people say not to do that, but you have experience with that?
Well, you know, dedication. yeah, and, you know, cans. I don't really do bottles of beer, usually, in and out.
I would say a lot of hikers I've asked that do take alcohol hiking would say more like hard alcohol. Are you more of a beer drinker?
Yeah, I am more of a beer drinker. I think... Yeah. I mean, if you're taking hard alcohol hiking, it's not like, I mean, I do like mixed drinks at home, but you're not doing like margaritas.
Right.
So, you know, it's not, I've never really been a fan of getting drunk outside. Cause I'm already happy.
Exactly.
But yeah.
Well, you know,
I mean, if someone offers me some whiskey, I will drink it, but, but I probably won't pack it out myself.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point of asking the question. And, you know, if you brought your blender, you probably could have plugged it in at Bernie there on the on the battery.
That's true, yeah.
Do you filter all your water on the trail?
Yes. I have a Sawyer filter, and I really like it. You know, it's 2 ounces, and it's like, if you keep it clean, it's like 30 seconds. But of, you know, delayed gratification, and I think it's super worth it. I've known people that say that it just, you know, toughens your immune system, but yeah.
Yeah, I have a Sawyer. That's all I use. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Not the Sawyer Mini, though. Don't buy the Sawyer Mini.
Not the Sawyer Mini. Okay.
Yeah. You'll spend your whole life filtering water. I literally could do more miles. Once I switched, it was crazy.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. I think I want to say I have the Mini, so maybe I'll switch.
Mm-hmm.
What about trekking poles?
I use trekking poles. I don't know how people hike without them. They make me go probably twice as fast. Yeah, I use Black Diamond ones with cork handles. Really like those. Keep your hands from getting too sweaty.
Those seem to be a pretty popular brand.
Yeah. And as far as I know, I mean, I bent mine in the last little bit. It was really stormy and it was just muddy. And then I slipped and fell on one. But as far as I know, Black Diamond will stand by everything that they make. So I should be able to get it replaced pretty much for free. Or not the whole pole, but at least that part.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, You're just a tiny little girl. I can't imagine you bending a pole. But, I mean, I've bent a pole or two in my time, and I'm like 3 times the size of you.
Yeah, well, I fell like hard. I fell like down a little ways and directly on it. So, yeah.
Okay. Do you carry bear spray or a firearm?
No. Yeah, no. 3-hikers don't really do that.
Yeah. Well, what about before you thru-hiked?
I think I carried bear spray once in the Olympics. It was overkill. I wouldn't do that again. I'm so much more comfortable with the prospect of running into a bear. Not grizzlies, but the black bears that we have here. Yeah, it's like, you know, they're practically, like, I mean, they're not... Like, don't go pet a bear, but, like, they're pretty friendly in comparison to some things. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I asked that question, you know, because, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way you do. I think a lot of people's retort to that would be, you know, oh, what about cougars?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Like, if a cougar decides that it wants you to die, you're gonna die, like. That's just, you know, you're not really going to fight back. They're so fast. So I just decided to think of cougars the way that, you know, you tell kids to think about monsters under the bed. It's like, no, they don't exist. No, you're fine.
That's good.
Because, I mean, nobody, I don't think anyone has been killed by a cougar on the PCT, at least in the last 10 years. I've never heard of that, if it has happened.
You know, I have no facts to back this up, but I don't think anybody's been killed by a cougar in 30 years that hasn't been doing something stupid.
It's, yeah.
And that's not even just hikers, it's just anything. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I can Google that, but like, it's just more fear than anything else.
Yeah.
Do you have any hiking books that you might refer to somebody, or maybe you have a favorite hiking book, like, I don't know, Wild?
I did read Wild before the trail. That happened. I wouldn't say it was a driving force, but I mean, it's a good book.
I liked it too. You just
have to take it for what it is. So yeah, I mean, I'd still recommend Wild. I'm really plugging Carrot Quinn, on this interview. But I'm reading her book right now. Thru Hiking Will Break Your Heart, is excellent. I'd say that one is very, it's like the only book that gets it, you know, it's basically her blog, put into a book form, with some extra stuff. But it's the day to day, and it moves pretty slow because it's like every day of being on trail. But then it's the kind of thing where you're reading through and then all of a sudden you're in Oregon and you're like, oh, when did that happen? and that's exactly how hiking is. So I'd really recommend that one. If you are looking for something that is, like exactly what thru hiking is like in book form.
Yeah. I'm familiar with the name. I haven't read a lot of her stuff, so maybe I'll have to finally check out that book, 'cause I've heard it referred a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Any other books?
I mean, in terms of like trip planning, I'd say Yogi. But I think that's about, I haven't read too many trail, trail books.
Okay. Yeah. The one that I read that was PCT was, Dances with Marmots. It was pretty good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was a good book. Covers the whole trail. But, if you could pick one person to hike with, dead or alive, famous or not, who would you hike with and why?
Oh, dang.
Carrot Quinn.
That'd be fun. Yeah. It'd be cool to meet her. Let's see. I think it would be fun to hike with Anish. That'd be pretty sweet. I'd look up to her tremendously.
Yeah.
For those of you that are not familiar, Anish or Heather Anderson, holds the speed record on the PCT and the AT, and is the only person to have held both of those records at the same time.
Yeah, and she's local to you, right?
She is, yeah.
That's cool.
And just so humble. So, such a cool person.
Yeah, so you met her?
Briefly. At a talk that she gave. But, I mean, I haven't, like, you know, sat down and had coffee with her or anything.
Cool. Do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
I've listened to Trailside Radio before, but that's probably the only one I've paid too much attention to, except for this one, of course. My problem with podcasts is that I want to like really sit down and listen to each one, but you know, then you spend like hours doing that. But if I'm like doing something at the same time, then I am not really concentrating on anything. So, but I've heard good things about Trailside Radio, and yeah.
Well, especially all the episodes were the year you hiked, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like a, you know, if you really want to, like, punch yourself in the gut with nostalgia, it's a really good way to do it.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's funny because I actually interviewed Ratatouille from Trailside Radio, and really cool dude, and I, one of the things he mentioned was one of the podcasts he listens to is Sounds from the Trail, and I had never listened to it. I kind of was putting it off, and I found out I love that one too. So,
I'll put it on the list. Yeah,
yeah, it's a great podcast, and part three, I think it is he hiked last year on the Pacific Crest Trail, but they cover more trails.
Okay,
it's not just the Pacific Crest Trail. So this year they have somebody on all three trails.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of cool. And then the Trail Show is by far my favorite hiking podcast. So that's nice. They're all Triple Crowners, and they just have fun talking about hiking. So anyway, cool. Do you listen to any other podcasts other than hiking?
Sometimes I listen to Radiolab. I listen to the radio quite a bit, so not so much podcasts, but
yeah.
This American Life is really good. Obviously, I listened to Serial the first season when it came out.
Oh, you're one of those.
Whatever that means.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. I really like Radiolab a lot. I listen to that one. It's good.
Yeah. But yeah, I'd say Serial probably sucked me in the most out of any podcast. I mean, yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, hey, thanks for coming on the Cascade Hiker podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show. Go on back to CascadeHikerPodcast.com and, you know, leave me a comment. Tell me what you thought. That's how I know everything's going good, or maybe some things are going bad. But maybe you have some ideas there. And if you have some more questions for any of our guests, leave a comment under their episode, and maybe we can get them back on and answer some quick questions there. You can send me an email if you don't want to leave a comment. It's ibighiker@gmail, ibighiker@gmail. Give my Facebook page a like, North Cascade Hiker. Follow me on Twitter, @N_CapitalCascadeCapitalHiking. That's @N_CascadeHiking. I try to give you guys multiple ways to get a hold of me. Give me some comments on the show and maybe some ideas for some guests. Thanks again for listening to the show. Here's a little bit more of that Whiskey Fever track, Tall Grass.
You were sweet like honey on a heartbeat. You were fine like wine in the sunshine. I could feel you coming on strong. Could never be wrong, could never be wrong. See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. I come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong, it could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave